I've decided that 2:30 a.m. is sort of the magic hour in the worst way for me. Like, that's the hour, if I haven't been able to go to sleep by then, because I'm worrying, like, the next day is just going to be bad. I'm going to have to make some adjustments. Obviously, I try to go to bed much earlier than that, but you've had those nights where you just can't sleep. You're tossing and turning. Maybe you have to get out of bed and you're pacing the floors and you're worrying about something on the horizon. I think there's probably two categories of things that we worry about. One is the category of things we can't control. It's the health scare that's on the horizon or the treatment that's ahead for ourselves or a loved one, and we're wondering if they're going to be okay. Or it's the choices of a family member or friend they're making that seem to be taking them down the wrong path, and we hope that they'll get it together, but there's not much we can do about that. Or maybe things are bad at work or at school, and it's other people, and you just don't know what it's going to be like to show up tomorrow to all the drama, all the infighting, all the pressure, all the stress. So there are those things that we can't control, but we stay up worrying about. And there's the other category of things that are equally worrisome. It's the things we can control. It's the decisions that are in front of us that we have to make. Do I stay in this job that I really don't like, or do I quit and go do something else? Do I take this new opportunity that's in front of me? And what will that mean for myself or for my loved ones? Do I choose this doctor or that doctor for the treatment that I need? And all these decisions, the burden, the weight that we feel to make those decisions, especially when we rightly ask, what is it that God would want me to do? How do I hear from God about which choice I should make, which direction I should pursue? So the first category of things, there's a sermon for that. We've preached it. We've talked about it. You can't control it, so don't be anxious about things, but pray, and God will hear you and act. We've done those sermons, and I'm sure we'll do them again. There's another kind of sermon that we're going to talk about today, which is, what do you do when you have a choice in front of you, and you want to decide what it means to follow God's will? How do I hear from God in this moment? What would it look like to seek out and follow God's will? Sometimes, when we are seeking to follow God's will, it is much clearer than we think it is. When Paul is writing to the Thessalonians, in two chapters back to back, he very clearly tells them what God's will for them is. In chapter 4, beginning in verse 3, he says, it's God's will that you should be sanctified, that you should avoid sexual immorality, that each of you should learn to control your own body in a way that is holy and honorable, not in passionate lust like the pagans who do not know God, and that in this manner no one should wrong or take advantage of a brother or sister. In the very next chapter, beginning in verse 16, he gives them these short commands. Rejoice always, pray continually, give thanks in all circumstances, for this is God's will for you in Christ Jesus. As I read those passages from Paul, I can pretty clearly line out some things that are God's will. Be sanctified. Avoid sexual immorality. Control your body. Don't take advantage of other people. Rejoice and pray and give thanks. Those things are pretty clear cut. Now, I know applying them is difficult, but those things seem pretty clear cut. So in the middle of this sermon series on discernment, you know, last week we talked about how every decision, every realm of our life is subject to the reign and the will of God. There's no compartment that we say, this is separate from my faith. So now we've acknowledged that every decision is subject to God. What does it look like when it's in front of us and we want to make the right decision? Well, Paul's just given us some pretty clear things that are God's will. Sometimes we just have to act according to those principles. It's not about two very difficult, unclear choices. The path is clear, and we need to take it. You go all the way back to the book of Exodus, Moses has found himself in a tough spot. He's spending all day adjudicating matters between people, and he's getting worn out. And his father-in-law, Jethro, comes to him, and he says, "Why are you doing this all day?" And Moses says this in Exodus 18. "Well, because the people come to me to seek God's will. Whenever they have a dispute, it's brought to me, and I decide between the parties and inform them of God's decrees and instructions." And Jethro says, "Well, that's not good. You're going to burn yourself out. You're going to wear the people out. You can't be doing this all the time. First of all, get some help. You don't need to be the judge of every case. So get some help." But second, Jethro says this, "Teach them, these people, God's decrees and instructions, and show them the way they are to live and how they are to behave." What he's saying here is that if people need to know what God's will is, you don't have to sit there and tell them each time. Teach them his instructions, and they should be able to figure it out in some cases. You don't need to tell them what they already know. So yes, there might be some matters where it's unclear, but sometimes it's pretty clear, and all you're doing is sitting there and telling them to do what they already know they probably should do. Give people the principles, and their choices will be clear. Sometimes when the choice is clear as to what God's will is, we don't need to discern. We need to just act. We don't need to spend a lot of time trying to hear God's voice to figure out what he would say to us. He's told you some things. What would it look like to act on them? James says if you know the good that you're supposed to do and you don't do it, that's sin. So maybe we should stop pretending that in some cases it's really unclear to us what God's will is. When King David was climbing up to his rooftop and gazing down at Bathsheba, he didn't need to discern what God's will for him was at that moment. He needed to act by stepping down and getting back to his own business. When Ananias and Sapphira had proceeds from a sale and they were deciding how much to give to the ministry of the apostles and how truthful to be about that, they didn't need discernment. They needed to act and tell the truth. When you come across someone who's being mistreated, put down, and oppressed, and you see they're being treated not the way Jesus would treat people, and you're wondering whether or not you should do something about it, you don't need discernment. You need a backbone. When you're wondering whether in this unhappy period of your relationship, of your marriage, you should step away, you don't need discernment. You need conviction. When you see a clear need for generosity, and you're wondering whether you should be open-handed or build a third bigger barn, you don't need discernment. You need to act. When one of your youth ministers gets up and says, "We need volunteers in children and youth ministry," and you wonder, "I wonder if God will speak to me and tell me to do this." I think he has. You don't need discernment. You need to act. So many times we make it complicated. Well, let's see what God would want for me. There are times when it's clear and we don't need to discern. We've got the message. We need to act. We should stop complicating things. With every choice, we need to hear from God. We've heard a good bit, and sometimes it's just a matter of doing the thing we know we need to do, or not doing the thing we know that we shouldn't do. But I know that not every choice is clear. There's not always the moral high ground in every choice we're faced with. Sometimes it's two pretty good options. Sometimes it's two not so great options, or two pretty neutral options. Like, do I take this job opportunity? It's not obvious what's better. It's not a clear case of which one more aligns with God's will. And what I want to say to you about these choices where it's not clear you should release some of the pressure on yourself. It's very rare that one of those decisions is going to throw your life so off track that you'll never get back to where you want to be. But you can ask questions like, well, can I serve God in my current job? Can I serve him in my new job? Well, that's good. Can I serve God alongside this potential mate or not? Usually the answer is yes. So take some of the pressure off yourself. Several years ago, I read the book Decisive by Chip and Dan Heath. And they talk in their book about how to make better decisions and also just how to have a better decision-making process. And they list some errors that we often make when it comes to decision making. One of those is called narrow framing. Narrow framing means that everything is a choice between the good and the bad, and that if I pick the bad, I've thrown everything out of whack. There's one good choice, even if it's not clear to me, and my job is to investigate and find it out. When you narrow frame, it often leads to a life path that you imagine looks like this. Okay, so it's sort of a trajectory where every fork in the road, you've got to get it right or you're off for good. You'll never make it. So if a job opportunity comes in front of me and it's not clear which one, I'd better find out, because what if I pick the wrong one? I'm doomed forever. And they quote a man in their book named Brian Bransfield. He was, at the time at least, a member of the Council of Catholic Bishops, and he did a lot of counseling of young adults who had a lot of life choices in front of them, and they would come and say, should I take this job or move to this city or marry this person? And they would be so full of angst, worrying that this one decision was the linchpin for the rest of their life. Bransfield had this to say: actually, there are 18 things that God would be very happy if you chose. You're not cornered into becoming a priest or not, or marrying this person or not. And he goes on to say, you're telling me that God looked at you and said, oh, there's only one thing you can do with your life. I know it, and you have to guess it, or else. Could it be that we are putting our constraints on God? In these choices, God's will for you, excuse me, is not some super secret path that you've got to be a spiritual detective to figure out. God's will for your life often looks more like this version of the timeline, where there are many different ways that you can make a right choice and end up where you want to be following God's will. And not every fork in the road has such high stakes. So when you envision the chart like this, then you can ask questions like, well, when these choices come up, can I avoid sexual immorality? Can I treat people well? Can I be thankful if I do this or if I do that? You might be able to. Those are the criteria. So yes, when it's clear, sometimes you need to act. When it's not clear, I think we need to relax just a little bit. Lower the stakes. I understand that there are still real consequences for decisions we make for our lives, but to view every decision as an opportunity to fall out of God's will is too high stakes. Not everything is that clear and obvious. And there are many ways to serve God and be faithful to his will when we are presented with choices. You can serve God in this job or that job. You can be sexually moral and control your body with this spouse or without this spouse. You can rejoice and be thankful in this city or in that city. You can feel confident that you can follow God's will regardless of the choice you make when it's not clear. My family had to go through this kind of discernment. From the moment I had lunch with Paul and Stan in summer of 2022, we had a discernment process to make. And there were a lot of great things about this opportunity, but it wasn't like, well, here's the clear moral choice, and here's the immoral choice. And I knew that there were stakes, high stakes for this church, for my family, but I didn't feel like one of these two ways was the only way to serve God. I think I could still have served God in the role I had before. Some things might have needed to change on my end or their end, but we could have made that work. So we ask questions like, is this good for our kids? What does this mean in the short term and the long term? Is this good for our extended family? Is this good for my career? Can I serve God in this new role? Is this what I've been prepared for? Those are the questions we ask. But at no point did I think, if I get this wrong, I have missed out on God's secret will for me. Because the choice wasn't a moral choice in that regard. So the stakes were high for myself, for my family, for the churches I was part of, but I didn't feel like it was an ethical choice, that one was clear obedience and one was clear disobedience. So in some ways that takes the pressure off, in some ways it's frustrating because you want it to be clear, don't you? It's nice when it's clear. It's not always clear. So I know that there are very tough decisions we have to make, and they don't always have an obvious godly answer. We will continue to talk in the coming weeks about prayer and fasting, wise counsel, and the things that help us make decisions when they're not clear. But what I want you to go away with knowing is this: the broad outlines of God's will are very clear. We read about those in Thessalonians. So that makes two things in front of us. One, when it's clear, we don't need more discernment. There's no excuse not to do the right thing when the answer is obvious. We don't need discernment when it's clear. We need action. And when it's not clear, we can relax and take the pressure off a little bit. We can follow God's will in these settings, whether we choose A or whether we choose B. God has not wound up the world and wound up your life and said, "All right, good luck. Good luck." So when you come to a moment when the right choice is clear but hard, God might not need to give you discernment, but he is there with you to provide the courage you need to do the right thing you know you need to do. God's not abandoned you in those moments. And when you come to a moment when the choice is not clear, God is not sitting up there with the popcorn going, "Well, they better pick door number two. Let's see how this goes." Either way, when the choice is clear or when it's not, God is with you in every single one of those moments. And I want us to take courage and comfort in that. Let's stand and sing.